The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We are not going to talk about two nights of the Diamondbacks in LA against, well, actually we will, because man, were they awful last night. Whew. Gina Mizell is going to be with us. Gina left The Athletic last month covering the Suns. She is super, super talented and has made the plunge. So did Craig Morgan when he left The Athletic. They're making the plunge and doing kind of what we're doing, or we've been doing for the last almost 9 years now, and we're just going to go do this ourselves. We're not going to sit here and have people in cities around the globe say, yeah, employee number 02312, out. We're not going to be in a space of only say nice things about the teams that we carry, in particular the NFL, because we don't want to piss off the three or four sponsors that make the station run. No, we're not doing that. So Gina is covering the Suns. She has her own little company, and it's going to be a big company down the road. I think she's super talented. So Gina Mizell will be with us to talk about the Suns. That comes up at 10:20. Zach Alvira is going to be with us today. We've had Zach on before with Times Publications. He also has a cool podcast over on ArizonaVarsity.com. You should check out Zach covering high schools, because I think this is going to be the week where we get some answers. It just depends on what Ducey has to say on Thursday afternoon at 3. We'll get into that in a minute. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union has been around a long, long time in the Valley, and it's where Sports 360 does their business. I walked into the Desert Financial Credit Union in Gilbert last week, was greeted by a nice, friendly person. I was masked up. I took care of my business. They offered me a water out the door and said, have a great day. It was a terrific experience. There was the smart people all around me that were masked up. Felt very comfortable there, and they have the drive-thrus as well. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. Title sponsor of Sports 360 AZ and the Football AZ Show, which airs, by the way, tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. We're going to do something a little different than football, though. Amare, in depth. That'll be tonight on the Sports 360 AZ Show. Eric is with us. Yesterday, you wrote a terrific column based off of what California announced yesterday over on the high school space. I'll get to that with you a little bit later in the show. But have you watched how bad the Diamondbacks have looked the first two nights?
I didn't watch a lot last night, but I did see the highlights. And I just
keep there were highlights?
Saying, I just
there
were keep highlights? Saying, well, Dodger highlights. I just keep saying to myself that the games don't count. This is what do they call this? Summer exhibition baseball? Is that what they're calling this? Since it's not spring anymore?
Yeah.
I think the Diamondbacks are going to be fine. It, like we talked about yesterday, it's good
What's
to
fine?
See live
What's
baseball.
Fine? What's fine?
A playoff team. A World Series team? No, but a playoff team.
So they're going to win, what, 35 games? They'll be about 500.
I'm not really into the prediction thing, because their schedule is pretty difficult compared
Early.
To some of the other teams that made – yeah. Compared to some of the other teams in Major League Baseball. But, you know, we'll see. They have the pitching. They have to stay healthy, but they have the pitching. So.
And we're having Pedro on Thursday?
Pedro's going to drop? Yep,
wow.
That is confirmed. That is confirmed.
Big with season.
He's going to be Skyping in with you from the Tuque, because I guess he will not be at a park for opening weekend, or at least on Thursday. So.
He shouldn't be.
I don't think so either.
The whole thing with announcers traveling, I think, is going to end. That's just a line item on the budget that they don't need to have happen. And I'm sure there's some announcers that are going to hate hearing that and just, you know. But it's you can do. The game last night sounded fine. If Steve Berthiaume and Bob Brenly didn't mention, it was really Steve. He didn't mention more than a few times that he was doing it from Chase Field. You would never know. I read where Charlie Steiner is doing all the Dodger games on radio from his house this year. It's not that hard. You have three monitors. You're keeping score. You have somebody in your ear. I mentioned yesterday, I did this before, and that was 15, 20 years ago. Technology's changed all that stuff. So the idea, and I read even where Vin Scully did a game from his house, back in the late 60s. And he relayed the story of how he had some people. They were playing a game in the Caribbean, the Dodgers were, and he couldn't go and because they had the facility. So somebody on the phone saying, strike one, and here's the pitch, strike one. And he had everything about this city that they were doing the game from. All the information, like the beaches and the food and the this. So all it was an infomercial on the city, right?
It sounds very Vin Scully-esque, knowing the way he prepares and the great storyteller that he is on the air. I mean, he's one of the few that you don't need a color analyst with Vin Scully. Because you listen just to hear him. You don't even necessarily always listen for the game. And the one thing, Brad, that you taught me when we started this venture is that I never noticed before is how they shoot games, like how Fox Sports Arizona or ESPN shoots particular games. And the one thing that you're seeing a lot with these early baseball games, everything is just nice and tight. We're not, unless it's a home run, we are not going to show the empty bleachers. That center field camera is going to be nice and tight. No more of the real rich people, you know, at Dodger Stadium that sit in those real posh seats right behind home plate. Nope, we're not going to show those tarps. So
there's a couple shots that they showed of the defensive alignment. And that's the high up shot that comes down and, you know, shows who's in left, who's in center, who's in right. That's fine. You know, the low level shots, they had more of those cardboard cutouts behind home plate last night. And that's fine. That'll get old in about a week.
Right.
In about a week, it'll get old. And then, you know, in the Diamondbacks, the way that they shoot their games at home, they have that little suite down below where you get the goofs that sit there and wave, you know, and all that stuff while the game's going on, goofs. But beyond that, they have signage. So I don't think we're going to see many of the fans behind the stands. I was in my office last night in here, and I had the game on, and I wasn't even watching the game, and it was kind of nice to have crowd noise and an organ music going. And I was just sitting here working, and it was like, oh, yeah, there's a game. Of course, they're getting their ass kicked, but you know, that was beside the point.
For the second night in a row.
Well, but look, they left Madison Bumgarner and Robbie Ray in Phoenix. So, you know, they throw poor Taylor Clark out there, and it's batting practice. And Mookie Betts, the Dodgers now have the little piece of video they need for the rest of the year with Mookie Betts. And Cody got his stuff the night before. And Jock Peterson hit. I think Jock Peterson's got like 8 RBIs already. Too bad that it's just against the Diamondbacks in 2 games. But man, this morning, my texts. Boy, the Diamondbacks were awful. Man, they looked terrible. Guys, come on now. Come on. It's a couple preseason games. If the games weren't on television, you'd never know.
Right.
So, and I guess the ratings, from what I'm hearing, the first 2 games, numbers were pretty good. But like last night in Kansas City played Houston last night. And it was the highest rated event on television last night. Now, I know there was a 3-hour Bachelorette or Bachelor. Well, you're a Bachelor guy. Was it 3 hours last night?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was like 3 hours of that. And there's not a chance I can make it through 3 seconds. I don't care who gets a rose. I don't. But 3 straight hours of that versus preseason baseball. And preseason baseball crushed it. That's in Kansas City. So I'm
baseball town.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to Friday. I mean, the other stuff from last night, I thought for the NFL players, Eric, it was a win yesterday for them to put plant their flag and say, we are not going to do this if you guys cannot get us tested. And by the way, we're not going to play even one preseason game. And so thankfully, mercifully, it's all gone. It's out of the way for preseason. And good for the players. I think this is really good for the players. I've heard where coaches are, well, we have to have harder practices now. Okay, you're going to beat up your whole workforce in August to try to get to games in November? Come on.
This is a good example of how social media can be powerful and influential in a good way. Because, you know, Patrick Mahomes called so-and-so, who called David Johnson, who connected with Nuke Hopkins, who relayed to Russell Wilson, to Kyler Murray, that, hey, you know, Monday morning, let's all put these tweets out with the hashtag, and all of a sudden the NFL takes notice. I mean, we already saw that earlier this summer, but it's good for the players because nobody likes these preseason games.
Yeah.
No, that's for sure.
Gina
Mizell is going to join us on the other side, and Eric and I are going to talk about the high school stuff after Gina and I, and then Zach Albira. So we have a busy show ahead. Stay with us. All right, let's switch gears now over to the Suns. Gina Mizell is with us for a few minutes. Gina decided to take the plunge like we did a while back, where we said, you know what, we believe in us, we're going to bet on us. And we started this in 2012. Gina, in the last month, it's been about a month now?
Yeah, 3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, 3 weeks, and you're still on the right side of the grass. Come on, that's great.
Exactly. No, healthy writing back sort of in a rhythm. It's been really nice.
That's good. So Gina was with The Athletic, and The Athletic went through their cuts, and you decided to open Valley Tales. So first, tell us about the transition. Mm-hmm. Why Valley Tales? How can people find your content if they're into the Suns and other things?
Absolutely. Well, it's been obviously a very strange and challenging month in a strange and challenging year, I think, for all of us. But when The Athletic made their decision to have layoffs, and I was unfortunately part of that group, I still just had this desire to keep trying to cover this team, especially given the fact that this is such a bizarre restart to this season. This is something that us as sports fans were never going to forget, all of this Orlando bubble situation. And so I'm like, okay, what are some ways that maybe I could continue to do that? And so a colleague in the business had told me about Substack, which is a platform where writers can create their own newsletter. And so I kind of looked into it. I liked the system. I liked the freedom that it provided. And so my goal is to keep providing the same type of coverage that I was providing at The Athletic. And so if you liked my work over there, hopefully you'll like the work there at Valley Tales as well. And so right now it's a newsletter that's free. When the games start next week, the 8 seeding games for the Suns, I will move to a paid model and see how that works if people want to support me directly. But yeah, it's kind of a way to where I can just keep doing what I've been doing. And so, like I said, if you enjoyed my work at The Athletic or at previous stops throughout my career, it's going to be the same type of thing over there. It's just, like you said, I'm kind of betting on myself a little bit and taking my own leap of faith.
Yeah, no, you're super talented. You're going to come through this, but here's the thing. The Suns need to win. Be a little bit interesting. Just a little bit interesting.
Right.
As a journalist, you can't root, but at the same time, you guys, you can't be losing by 40 at halftime. That just doesn't work if I'm going to do this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation where I have no control over how good or bad the team that I cover is. But like you said, I think if the Suns were not part of this restart, then would I have done this venture? Probably not, to be honest with you. But the fact that they're involved, that they were invited to the party, and they're still plenty to write about and to follow and to ask questions about, that sort of seemed like the right thing to do. But no, you're right. I mean, teams that that are really, really good obviously get generally more readership and more support and more eyeballs than teams that aren't. And yeah, the Suns haven't been to the playoffs technically in 10 years. And so that, I think, is a little bit of a struggle as far as finding an audience. But still, I mean, I grew up in Phoenix. I do believe that this is a Suns town at its core, and so there's still that group of diehard fans that will read anything and everything about the team, even if it makes them sad or angry. And so those are definitely the people that have already jumped on board with Valley Tales, and I'm hoping more will in the coming days and week or so as the games get going again.
Well, I agree with you about it being a Suns town. I really do. I think at its core, this is a Suns town. The thing is, when you talk about the diehard fans, they've died hard for the last 10 years.
Yep.
And Robert doesn't like it when I print May 29th, 2010, but I do it because, come on now, you know, I was here during the Barkley and Kevin and Amari and all that stuff, and you've taken this thing and screwed it up. But this is me throwing my opinion and ranting here, Gina. I think there is this starting to do this turn the corner thing even though I'm still in the camp that one day Devin Booker is going to sit in front of his locker and do what so many athletes have done here in Phoenix before, and that is just kind of look up and say, yeah, I think my time here needs to end. So let's just talk about him. And what's at stake for him here in this restart? And where do you think his headspace is?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how he finishes off this season, which obviously was such a huge step for him, becoming an all-star for the first time, the way he shot the ball so efficiently, and the way that you could see if you put a competent point guard next to him in Ricky Rubio, when you saw the flashes from DeAndre Ayton, you saw Kelly Oubre and the steps that he made in his development, like you saw what Devin Booker could be, and I think you continued to get, as far as national recognition, I think Devin Booker started to see that. And so he's going to get 8 games. Only one of them is on national television, but he's still on that stage. And I'm just really fascinated to see if he's able to just pick right back up where he left off and is the same player, what else he's maybe added to his game during these 4 months, because that's been a thing throughout his career where he's added something to his game or improved in a certain area of his game each season. So, yeah, it's definitely a big opportunity for him to, again, be part of this restart. And I think both with him at the center and then the Suns team as a whole, this is a good opportunity to sort of evaluate what they have, try to build some more chemistry, and then, you know, see what that propels into the future. Because I think you're right. I think with Monty Williams in place, with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, clearly the franchise cornerstones, that there is a foundation here that I think is actually legitimate this time, but it's still a process to get from point A to the playoffs and beyond.
Okay, do you agree with me, though, in Booker, that if things kind of go this way or that way, that eventually he's going to pull the, I need to be somewhere else. I know he's got a big contract. I know he's got years left on his contract, but he just feels to me like the type of guy that would say, you know what, I experienced an all-star game finally. Why are we not going to get this thing figured out?
Right. Well, the first thing that I will say is that Devin has given no indication that he is unhappy in Phoenix, and he has said time and time again that his goal is to be one of the people who helps pull the Suns out of this funk. But I think just human nature, and this is just me talking, that if any of us were in a bad work situation for now, it's been 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, like eventually any of us would be like, okay, is it maybe time to look at something different? And so I think he is encouraged by the progress that the franchise has made this year. I think him and Monty Williams have a really good relationship already, and so I think that is important. But again, at some point you're gonna look at your imaginary watch and be like, okay, this is now my 7th, 8th year in the league and we still haven't made the playoffs or something like that. And I could see, just because anyone would start considering maybe something different. So again, there's no indication right now that he's like on the verge of demanding a trade to the Timberwolves or demanding a trade to the Knicks or all the rumors and storylines that people want to pop up. But I certainly wouldn't blame him if down the road, if it still was like, okay, like you said, maybe I've exercised my potential here and maybe it's time for a change of scenery.
Okay, the player that I'm looking at closest is DeAndre Ayton's got to show something here. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. We're at a point where in DeAndre Ayton's circle, from what I hear, is he wants it to be all about DeAndre Ayton. And I don't mean that in a negative way. That's not going to happen here in Phoenix with Devin Booker here. Okay? He's not shown me much. He's been hurt. He's struggled. It's obviously the suspension. So there's been a lot around him. I know it's a small window for him, these games. But Gina, is there a bigger stage for DeAndre Ayton than this right now where he could put a team on his back or attempt to? Talk to me about Ayton.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And he's the player that I'm most interested to see how he performs in this Orlando restart as well. Because, yeah, his season was very bizarre long before COVID-19 hit the universe. You could have, no matter if everything would have gone according to plan, you would have looked back and said, okay, that was a weird year where, yeah, he served the 25-game suspension. He battled some ankle injuries. He was hurt when the season went dark. And so never quite got a ton of traction. But even so, in those flashes, you saw, okay, he's very clearly improved on the defensive end as a rim protector, and he was pretty, you could tell, just compared to last year to this year, just way more aware. His blocks numbers are doubled, essentially. And so now offensively, it's like, okay, does he become that aggressive guy who just bullies the ball inside? Because we've seen the size that he has, the athleticism he has, the skill that he has, and can he really just come in and dominate? And he's going to have a chance to go up against some good big men in these eight games, you know, a Kristaps Porzingis, a Joel Embiid, you know, the list kind of goes on. And I think you're exactly right that this could be a situation where if he comes out and plays really well in these eight games, that there could be some buzz around him going into his third season. Like, okay, is this finally when DeAndre Ayton turns the corner? And if he comes out and is inconsistent, then there's going to be a fraction of whether it's the fan base or just people who watch basketball that say, okay, he's still too inconsistent. And look at what Luka Doncic and Trae Young have done in their NBA careers so far. I mean, those comparisons are always going to be there. So yeah, like I said, he's the player that I'm most fascinated by as well. And definitely just interested to see what he does, because this is a great opportunity for him as well.
Tina Mizell's with us. You can find her content at Valley Tales. She'll give you more information on that when we wrap things up. I buried the lead in this interview. Who is not there in Orlando? Because there's been a lot written. There's been a lot speculated. Uh-huh. You're here in Phoenix, but I know that you talk and you... Who's not there?
Yeah, that's been the most awkward part of every like Zoom press conference that we have done with Monty Williams, because we've tried to ask it in very blunt ways. We've tried to ask it in, oh, how has so-and-so looked in practice, this player that we think might not be there? I asked it, I framed it in a way that I said, hey, do you at least expect to have your full roster available when scrimmages start, when games start? And Monty wouldn't answer that either. So, I mean, the two most notable names that we have not seen on a Zoom call, that we have not seen in any photos, that we have not seen in any videos, that we have not seen like in any evidence that they're in Orlando, are Ricky Rubio and Aaron Baines. And so obviously, if they were not able to play in any portion of this restart, that's a big loss for the Suns. Those are two huge key rotation players. But also, just because they are not there right at this moment doesn't mean that they won't be available when games start or at some point. And I will say that both of those two players were on the official rosters that the NBA released yesterday. So take that for what it is. But again, we've talked to basically every player on the roster at this point in these Zoom calls. And the fact that Ricky Rubio and Aaron Baines are guys that we have not talked to yet is a little suspicious and a little bit like, okay. But that's again been a weird part of this whole experience, because normally in regular times, we're at practice every day. We can do a head count. We're at shoot arounds. We're at the arena. You can see who's there and who's not. And it's a lot harder to dodge those questions, but it's going to be hard to dodge those questions too. But on Thursday, when these scrimmages start to be televised, then you're like, okay, if somebody's physically not there, why are they not there? So yeah, that's going to be really interesting to see how, you know, that all unfolds, but that's sort of the latest as far as who is there and who is potentially not there.
Good to see you. You've got a lot of enthusiasm. Obviously, you're dropping knowledge all over the place. If people want to find your content, how would they do it?
Yeah, so the website that you can go to is valleytales.substack.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Gina Mizell, GINAMIZELL, and the website is there as well. And once you go to the website, you can sign up for the newsletter, and then anytime I publish a piece, it'll go straight to your email inbox, and then you won't have to worry about checking it or finding it anywhere. But yeah, that's where all of my Suns content will be for the time being.
Good for you. Good for you. Stick with it and hang in there. And I will just say, even though I'm not supposed to root, I hope they have a nice run in Orlando, because it'll help you. Good stuff. Thanks, Gina.
No problem. Thanks, Brad.
Gina Mizell with us, and we're back with more after this timeout. So Eric's back with us. We have Zach Alvira here in about 10 minutes. Do you see where Khalil Tate already got waived, got blown out?
I did. Man. I did. I wasn't totally surprised.
That was a quick one.
There are no preseason games for these undrafted rookies or late round draft picks to try to make any noise. So that didn't surprise me.
If I were to tell you 2 years ago with him that, by the way, he's going to not get drafted, and he's going to get cut even before camps start. After he had his run, had some SI love, would you believe me that he would go that far?
his last 2 years at U of A were just
not
weird.
Good.
Not good.
Off the field, they were weird.
Yeah, but on the field, you know, injured, got replaced. Grant Gunnell came in. He obviously Sumlin likes him, but I think there was still some connection to Khalil Tate. And the big thing when Sumlin came in was, oh, is he going to change Khalil Tate? Is he going to make him more of a pocket passer? Which I think he did.
Noel Mazzone too. Remember Noel Mazzone came in there and all that. Right. I remember I told you guys, I'm going to go to U of A BYU to open the season in Tucson because this is going to be big. You know, Khalil's got this stage, and he was just awful. And they were just dreadful.
Wasn't that like a 17-10 game or 14-10 game?
Yeah.
Like a real just dog crap game.
I think like by halftime, I was in the car on that one. It's just like I drove to Tucson for nothing. So
we've done that before, though. We've left Tucson at halftime. Not in that particular sport, but in other sports we have. Yes. I don't think this year in that sport we're going to be doing that. But
no, I agree with you on that. All right, so high schools. Let's go through this. So Texas announced today that they are going to push back.
Only the big schools, not the 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, just the 5A, 6A. So,
but I think that's important because here in Arizona, you know, David Hines is very much about what's going on up in the White Mountains and Kingman, and he is very much not wanting to touch any of that. Like, I think that could be a scenario that they say, you know what, you guys can play football up in the high country, and we'll hold back 5A and 6A. I think that could be a scenario.
But I guess, you know, there's still small schools that play in the Valley that play the schools in Northern Arizona. So if you're
Phoenix
playing
Christian, Valley Christian,
correct. So if you're playing, how would that work?
Because Chandler Prep.
Yeah. Like, so would it only be like the 2A schools north of the Valley playing for a championship? And then there'd be another championship for the 2A schools if the season starts later in Phoenix.
No, that's true. I hadn't thought of. I was told yesterday by people that would know that they have three scenarios on. So if Ducey comes out on Thursday at 3:00 and says we are going to push back the start of the school year in class to the end of the first quarter, then I believe the AIA by Thursday afternoon around 4:30 will release these are the scenarios that we're looking at, or they will have figured out which one of the three scenarios they're going to go with. If Ducey says, we're staying the course right now, we still intend to open on August 17th, then as I sit here right now talking to you, I believe that David Hines and the AIA will say nothing, and they will sit tight. I think that they're of the opinion that, you know, all these states can say what they want, but let's give it some more time to see exactly where we are. And I kind of agree with that. I'm not mad at them about that. I'm mad that there's not been much said, because it does lead to speculation, as you and I have talked about off the air and on the air. But then when other states do something, it's, well, okay, if that's what they're doing, should Arizona do it? Which is a very fair conversation to have.
I guess, but Texas and California are much bigger states than Arizona. So I don't really know if the parallels line up when you're talking about, you have all these different equations. You have more people in there. You have more people in Texas and California. The COVID numbers are different between those three states. Is Arizona on a bit of a time crunch? Yes and no. Yes, because the season was supposed to start in less than a month. That's not happening. But right. Brad, do you really see kids going back to class on the 17th of August, considering our COVID numbers are still through the roof? They've gone down, but they've just gone down a smidge.
Okay. So as a dad, I'll just take that with a 15-year-old. And my wife and I have talked about this. Right now, we wish that there was a hybrid. We wish that there would be, and Chandler said no on the hybrid. And that would be, you could do some online and you could do some in class. There is the online academy in Chandler schools that our son will take a couple classes from. I'm comfortable with him going back with a mask on because I think everything in school will be so locked down from a cleanliness standpoint. I really believe that. Now, my bigger concern is the teachers and the coaches. You and I, we see coaches on the sidelines that are not spring chickens, that like helping out kids. And so if there's a coach that is out there and he gets sick and the worst happens, and guess what? If they do play, there's going to be kids that get sick. There may be kids that get sick next January. I don't know. At some point, we have to decide if we're going to go live lives and see that this is part of everyday life, or it's not part of everyday life, and we're going to stay hunkered down like this. Somewhere there's got to be a little bit of give, Eric. Otherwise, we're just going to sit here for years, because there's going to be the people that will not take a vaccine. The anti-vaxxers, they are out there in full force. Dwight Howard's right there in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know, I chuckle about him a little bit. But,
pretty outspoken
but
they're, about it, too.
Yeah, right. But they're the anti-vaxxers that say, we are never going to take a vaccine. So what happens on that front? And then you have the online academies that are sitting there just lined up saying, okay, you want to go play on your club team and come over here and just take your stuff online from us. We're Primavera, whomever. And you can accomplish both worlds. You don't need to go to a public school. You don't need to go to Brophy. You don't need to go to Notre Dame Prep. Come over here, take your online stuff, and then go work out at 8 a.m. with your club volleyball team at noon, at 2, at 4, at 6, whatever. That's sitting out there.
I think a bunch of people, myself included, thought that the pandemic was sort of at the mercy of us, when it's just the opposite. We're at the mercy of COVID, and there's no roadmap, Brad. You know, you and I have talked about this before. It might get better. It might get worse. I do see what you're saying. I think eventually kids are just going to have to get back in school. Someone's just going to have to make a decision that says, you know what, regardless of what the numbers are, we need to get the kids back in school mentally, emotionally, physically. They need to be back with their friends in the normal classroom settings, because this thing started in March. We're almost in August. That's a long time.
But what do you say to the teacher? It's like the NFL players laying down the flag saying, what are you guys doing for us in terms of testing? You're a teacher and you're standing in front of a class full of kids, 20, 30 kids, for 6, 7 classes a day. You got 200 kids walking in front of you. And the teacher's not protected. Where's the coach at in all this? Is the coach protected? And so, Eric, I agree with you that getting kids back in school is very important. But I think that David taking the time, I'm sitting in July 21st. If we're sitting here on August 1st, I've said right around there, Pac-12 is going to announce on July 31st what they're going to do. I think the AIA's got some runway. But if Ducey pushes the date back, then I believe David will act. And by Thursday afternoon around 4:30, we'll have a pretty clear idea what direction they're going to go, or at least some of the roadmaps that they're going to take. I don't believe right now that Arizona is going to take the, club and high school can coexist. I don't believe that to be the case, because there's too many bad intentioned people out there on the club end with club football that just want to take high school football, chew it up, spit it out, throw it away. It's already happened in basketball.
Yeah, even for basketball, one of the coaches I talked to, Charlie Wild, yesterday at Pinnacle, he's won 2 state championships, and I basically flat out asked him on the record, do you think it's going to be a tug of war if you have competing seasons and you have kids that want to go play on the club team and some kids that want to stay and play on their high school team? And he didn't even dodge the question. He basically said, yeah, there's going to be an issue with that, because we're going to do our best to keep our kids on campus. But right. If one kid says to another kid, hey, you know what, let's not play for Pinnacle, let's go jump to the club team, then you might have a couple other kids on Pinnacle that jump to the club team. And then it's just a complete imbalance. But you can say the same thing for the club teams, which he made a great point on. Some of the club, really good club teams might say, some of those players might say, you know what, I'd rather play on my high school team. So it's a give and take on both sides.
Yeah. Well, it's a money grab on the club side for the most
part. Of course. Sure.
For the most part. 80% of the club stuff's nonsense and garbage with a capital G. About 20% of it is done the right way with the right people. It's the way it works. Same with personal coaches and all that stuff. All right, Zach Elvira on the other side. Stay with us. All right, as promised, let's do a deeper dive into what's going on with the AIA and a look towards this Thursday when Governor Ducey speaks at 3 p.m. What is going on behind the scenes? What is it that will high school sports, what will it look like this coming fall or maybe next spring? Zach Elvira is someone we've had on before. We have a great deal of respect for Zach, works hard at it over Times Publications. He also does a podcast over at Arizona Varsity. He is one busy dude. As we sit here today on this Tuesday, will we have high school football starting on time in Arizona sometime in early to mid-September, in your opinion?
It's really hard to say, honestly. I'm gonna kind of answer in a different way. I think there will be high school football. However, I don't think it will be in September. I think we'll probably have a shortened season, maybe starting October 1st, possibly around that time. Now, I know that may not be the exact Friday, but, you know, there's some signs right now that point to things getting a little bit better here in Arizona. Now, things need to get a lot better in order for us to actually have high school sports, because safety is the most, you know, number one, I guess, important thing. But I do believe right now that there will be high school football unless Governor Ducey says otherwise, or obviously the districts here in the Valley, follow suit with a lot of them up north and decide to cut sports in general.
What is the feeling that you get around the state about this issue? Because what I'm seeing and hearing here in Phoenix is much, much different, Zach, than what I'm hearing out of Tucson or up in the White Mountains or in Flagstaff or out in Yuma. Those areas of the state are really at the mercy of what's going on here in Phoenix. And Tucson's up in arms about how that's transpired, where they haven't even touched a football or seen a football since March. What are you hearing?
You know, I'm kind of hearing the same thing as you. I know Tucson hasn't been able to do anything at all. They haven't even been able to gather at schools. I know Phoenix Union is one of the districts that's kind of the same way. They actually haven't had their teams all together at all either. Just, you know, kind of opposite of what we've seen in, you know, Goodyear and, the Gilberts and the Chandlers and the Mesas. Even the Mesa right now is kind of in a holding pattern from what I was told by one athletic director last week. But to your point, it seems like everything is kind of based off what's going on in the Valley, especially with, you know, like I said, Governor Ducey kind of being based out of the Valley and everything. It's really up to him, I believe, to, I guess, in some ways give us the green light to go, because the AIA is going off of what he says and other health officials. Right now it is kind of up in the air as far as what everyone is doing. And coaches, again, to your point, are not happy with everyone kind of being on a different schedule or different page right now. I mean, you've got Gilbert Schools, who last I talked to an athletic director, they're moving back into phase two right now, which means they're allowed to throw football to each other. But then you have Chandler Schools, who are still in phase one, where it's only conditioning and can't share equipment, stuff like that. And of course, like I mentioned before, you have some schools like Phoenix Union who aren't even allowed to practice at all or have summer camps. So there really is a divide when it comes to where every team is at. And, you know, I mean, I think all of us have pretty much heard about that letter sent to the AIA right now, which was headed by a lot of the Southern Arizona coaches. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, right now there's not a lot of, I guess, direction when it comes to what teams can do.
And that's my concern. And I've talked to David Hines about it on a couple of occasions. It's like the Wild Wild West. Whatever goes, goes. And you can't sit here and police everybody, and one school will take an inch and another will take 5 inches. It's just the world that we live in competitive high school football. We're talking with Zach Elvira from Times Publications. Also, he has a great podcast over on Arizona Varsity. Make sure you check that out. What do you yourself make out of what other states are doing? And is there a state that you look at and say, you know, Brad, that's a pretty good model of what they're doing over here or over there?
I really like what California and New Mexico are doing, pushing football back to the spring. I know New Mexico also said soccer was going to go into the spring. Now, we don't really have to worry about that as much here, because primarily the bigger schools are all in the winter for soccer. I know there are some smaller schools that are, you know, that play fall soccer. But I feel like soccer is one of those where it can be, I guess, a little bit better when it comes to the physical contact. I mean, yeah, they're still going to be, you know, up each other's faces and everything like that. But football is obviously the biggest concern with everything. And if I had to, if the AIA came to me and said, what do you think we should do? I would say probably move things to the spring. Now, the only problem with that is that really fair for all the spring athletes last year that were juniors that lost their season? Because, you know, obviously you get into that point where some coaches have to choose which sport to coach. You know, Mike Zdebski, for example, he coaches football, but then he's also a coach on the track team there at Hamilton. So will he have to choose? Will he be able to do both? Will athletes be able to do both? That's kind of the one tricky situation that we really don't know about. But if I had to choose which model, you know, based on the fact that the AIA is probably not going to move everything to the spring, I would say at this point, just do what Texas is doing. They announced it today. They're going to push, I believe, 5A and 6A football back, and then all the lower divisions are going to stay the same. I think you push everything back here in Arizona for sure. But, I mean, at this point, that's really the only model you can follow without just saying, okay, look, August 17th, we're going to go official practice no matter what.
Let's go through some hypotheticals here. So if you go the California route and you're a football kid and basketball is happening and track is happening and baseball is happening and wrestling is happening, all these sports are happening at the same time. The day of the multi-sport athlete, I hear it from coaches, oh yeah, you come over here and play for us. We want you to do other sports. Well, okay. Do you really want that to happen? Because the football kid on a Friday night's got a football game, but could that kid wrestle on a Tuesday? Oh, we can't have him miss practice. Well, then are you really multi-sport? Yeah. And so I look at this and say, if all those sports were at the same time, you can't tell me the track kid can't play in a basketball game at the same time. So there would have to be coaches cooperating. Bobby Newcomb at Castile is the track coach or helps with track along with doing football. A lot of these football coaches are also in track. The club side of it, where you have a club baseball coach, which Hamilton does, who happens to be the head coach. And what happens on that front is the high school going to save their number one on a Friday night against Chandler High for the club game on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on field two. Is that really, really good for the high school experience? So do you think, Zach, and I'm kind of saying this tongue-in-cheek, do you believe that coaches would play nice and look first and foremost at the high school, the betterment of the whole school, or it's football be damned and that's just the way it is?
No, I really don't think so. I think especially for some of those football coaches that are only football coaches, let's be honest, football is probably one of the most competitive sports that we have here in Arizona at the high school level. Just in terms of the number of, I guess, top talent that we have. And I truly believe that if you have a football coach, if you were to ask a coach today, they'd be like, oh yeah, sure, you know, we'll do that. When it comes to the actual decision the day of, no, they're not going to let a kid go, you know, wrestle and then play a football game the next day. There's no way they let him do that, especially if it's a top player, to your point. That's kind of the biggest thing that I guess would cause, well, I guess it is really, and that's pretty much the reason why we're not moving to the spring, because Arizona schools here heavily rely on those multi-sport athletes.
Yes.
Especially those schools up north. What those schools like Round Valley, what are they going to do? You can't have a kid, you know, but play football and then not have him play for the baseball team. A lot of those kids are probably three-sport athletes. They probably go, you know, fall, winter, and spring. So what are you going to do? You're going to tell them that they can't compete there? Then what happens to the baseball program? Are they going to have to, you know, shut down for the season again because they don't have enough players? That's the biggest issue that I think we're going to run into with spring, which is why I don't think we're going to move to that model.
Okay, so California announces that club sport, high school sport, they can compete at the same time. Do you believe that the AIA will take that same stance?
I don't. Well, I don't know. That's a really tough one because we see so many kids compete in the club basketball, the club volleyball. And I've even talked to coaches this summer who have said, oh yeah, we're not going to do anything, you know, in the summer because they're already in club anyway. So they don't really not, I don't want to use, they don't, I don't want to say they don't care, but for lack of a better term, they don't really care about getting the workouts in right now when they know that when club season is over at the end of the summer and before school is actually supposed to go back into session, they're going to be with them anyway. So I don't think it will be a huge change.
But Zach, you know these clubs. You know AAU is licking their chops. AAU has already pretty much destroyed high school basketball as we know it in the state of Arizona. They take talent. They give them the sales pitch. You come over to this club. The online portion of this, the Primaveras of the world, will thrive if just go to school online and then go work out for your club team and don't play for the high school anymore. I think there's a really slippery slope that's sitting here right now in this moment. If the AIA goes down that path, and I don't think David Hines will, I agree with you on this, but if they did, there's these 7-on-7 groups that try to make it sound like they're the biggest thing ever. They're not. They're not. And you know, club baseball is already kind of in the same boat. The idea of having a high school across your chest versus Crazy Dad saying, well, we got to go do this to get our scholarship. They don't know. They don't have a clue. They don't want to get a clue. So I think this is the biggest one to me that I look at and say, club, if they let them cross over, then look out for these online schools because they will take over.
Well, and especially because club basketball is going right now. I mean, we saw, I don't know if you saw it all over Twitter, but there was a club tournament that was happening.
Yeah.
I think right as schools were told to shut down their football camps.
Of course.
And their summer camps in general. And volleyball, you know, club teams are still going. I saw a video from one of my friends on Facebook probably a week ago about for a club baseball team, for a youth team. I mean, those are going no matter what. I mean, yeah, they're trying to do what they can, social distance and whatever, but a lot of these club basketball teams actually had fans in the stands, which I know I can probably say 99% confident there will not be a ton of fans at any high school event this fall, if there is games. So to your point, it is a very slippery slope because it seems like whatever the high schools are doing, a lot of these club teams are kind of doing the opposite and still playing games, still holding practices. And, you know, those 7-on-7 tournaments, especially, I mean, I saw a video where there was hundreds of people on the same field. And, you know, I'm not one to, you know, I guess police people when it comes to social distancing and all of this stuff. I asked them nicely on Twitter, say, hey, look, if you want to see sports, wear a mask, do what you can, whatever. But I mean, that gave me a bad feeling in my stomach, seeing how many people were on that one field for all those 7-on-7 tournaments. Because that's not going to help the cause at all to get sports back in the fall.
And of course, you probably have heard, as I have heard, of dozens of kids that have come down with corona from those types of events and high school basketball programs that were shut down because they were meeting secretly and they got corona. And well, it's never going to happen to me and all that nonsense. It's I don't want to say it's disheartening. It's just flat ignorant. Before I get you out of here, so what are you optimistic about?
I'm optimistic about sports actually happening. You know, I like I said, my confidence has kind of grown a little bit, but I will be honest, it's still around the 50-50 mark when it comes to whether or not we'll actually have a fall sports season. And that goes for all sports, not just football. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done in the state as far as to lower the, you know, just the number of hospitalizations. The number of cases I don't think is going to stop. We're going to see that continue to go up. Now, whether or not we can kind of plateau it so we have the same, roughly the same number of cases every single day, which I think has kind of been the case the last couple days at this point. But that infection rate has to come way down, I think. I think it did below one. And of course, I'm not, you know, a doctor. So I'm just kind of going off of what, you know, some of the stuff that I've seen and what I've heard. But a lot of those things, the hospitalizations, the number of deaths, the, you know, number of patients going to the ER for something like this, or with COVID symptoms, I should say, all that needs to still come way down in order for us to kind of be in that comfortable, okay, let's just see what we can do and see how far we can get. Now, granted, everyone has talked about that possible second wave. That could shut everything down 3 weeks after we start going. So
you know what on that one though, Zach? So could the flu in mid-October, which always shows up. You know, I've got coaches that have said to me, everybody's talking about COVID, and rightly so, but nobody's really pointed out that flu shows up around mid-October. And yeah. So if you have the double whammy on this, I'm optimistic. I just think that the AIA is taking their time where other states are getting out in front of it. And it's not going to go well here in this state if about another week or so, because July 31st, what I'm hearing from parents, we're either going to pull our kid and get out of here or we're going to stick it out. So I appreciate your time and insight. Good work over at Arizona Varsity, too, on your podcast.
You.
Congratulations on that. And keep up the good work at Times Publications. There's Zach Alvira, and we're back with more after this timeout.